This talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel Sensei at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is a resident teacher at the monastery and co-director of ZCNYC. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about the temple's retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org/ZCNYC. Thanks for listening.
Good evening, everyone. Nice to see all of you and be back in the United States. I was in India for 3 weeks with Shugan Sensei and 14 other Sangha members, 8 from New Zealand and 8 from US. And we met together in New Delhi and did a Buddhist pilgrimage. So I'm sure that will filter into some of the talks upcoming. I just about feel like I'm back in kind of, I don't know what normal means, but something like that. Sleeping like at the right times, perhaps. It was an incredible journey. You were all there with me, our Sangha. I could feel our Sangha and our practice and our connection to the Buddha, to the Dharma. So many things that I read about and in sutras, and to be in that place was amazing. And yet it was only a place, so something else had to happen. You know, Deer Park was just Deer Park. And people were there for many different reasons. So it required something of us pilgrims to meet that place and space and connection with respect and reverence, if that was what we wanted to, the quality we wanted to generate and meet with. The gratitude for a life given that has given so much life to us. This ceremony comes right out of the life of the Buddha and what he did with his community, Fusatsu. And I'd like to start with a quote from Wendell Berry. It's a little long, but I'll read it slowly because it has some very deep, pithy pointers. It's from The Art of the Commonplace. He says, "We have lived by the assumption that what was good for us, what would be good for the world. And this has been based on the even flimsier assumption that we could know with any certainty what was good for us, what was even good for us. We have fulfilled the danger of this by making our personal pride and greed the standard of our behavior toward the world, to the incalculable disadvantage of the world and everything living in it. And now, perhaps very close to too late, our great error has become clear. It is not only our own creativity, our own capacity for life that is stifled by our arrogant assumption. The creation itself is stifled. We have been wrong. We must change our lives so that it will be possible to live by the contrary assumption that what is good for the world will be good for us. And that requires that we make the effort to know the world and to learn what is good for it. We must learn to cooperate in its processes and yield to its limits. But even more important, we must learn to acknowledge that the creation is full of mystery. We will never entirely understand it. We must abandon arrogance and stand in awe. We must recover the sense of majesty of creation and the ability to be worshipful in its presence. For I do not doubt that it is only on the condition of humility and reverence before the world that our species will be able to remain in it." So tonight I would like to look at reverence and it's in and respect and in regard to our life, to fusatsu, to this seeing the world fresh, which fusatsu gives us the opportunity for. It's often translated as continuous good practice. And why is it important to bring in this quality, to live in this emotionally? Why is it essential in studying the Buddha way, the precepts, essentially every aspect of our training and our life, that we bring in the heart and mind of reverence, of respect, of honor? So for those of you who are new, some of you are new to fusatsu, it's a ceremony where we each independently and together atone for whatever karma or separation we have created, renew our vows to not create further harm, further separation, that we can make an acknowledgement of being one with, although we may not know what that is, we are interconnected, and whether you see it or not, there is an incredible net of Indra, where we each have a reflection of everything in the universe at any point. And this goes back to the time of the Buddha, on the night of the full moon, and we were in the places where the Buddha did this fusatsu. We were sitting in his dwelling place during Ango. And like thousands of people were on this pilgrimage, and there were these moments like on Mount Kutukutra. Yes, I was on Vulture Peak. Oh my God. And in the Buddha's home during Ango. And in Ananda's place, which was right next door, he was right in the dwelling next door. And so there were these moments where, out of the thousands of people passing through, our group seemed to have the place alone for like a 30-minute sit and a little talk by Shugan or something we presented. And then everyone would just come in. So this was one such place where Buddha went for the Ango, where we were able to do that, and where he did these fusatsus. So it was done on the night of the full moon, where the community would come together and appreciate and honor and respect each other in where there was a transgression, where somebody did something that wasn't harmonious, that hurt something or another person. And so that was done individually, all together. So each person would say something about it, and the Buddha would give a teaching or a way to correct it or help them with it. And you can see, and as I was in that space in India, just feeling like what that might have been like, what wholesomeness they were trying to create in the culture, in their lives. It's a chance to connect with and express reverence for life and to take inventory. Do we have respect for ourselves ultimately? Do you respect yourself? Do you respect your being? Respect for the mysterious one that you are, the unknown parts of yourself. Because insofar as we have self-respect and reverence for ourself, is to the degree that that will go outward as well. You know, wherever we're limited in that, that will be our limit externally as well. It will go so far and will hit a limit. if we don't find that deep respect within ourself, our care for life, respect enough to appreciate atoning. If we didn't have some reverence for life, some care for life, how could we be at one with it? We're still apart. So we need some kind of honor and respect to even appreciate the atonement, the being at one with. I like this quote from Albert Schweitzer, who said, I do no other than be reverent before everything that is called life. I can do no other than to have compassion for all that is life. That is the beginning and the foundation of all ethics. And karma simply means action. It's derived from a root kur, which means to make or to do. So the main idea behind karma is the relationship between what we choose to do and what we thereby make of ourselves. So it's primarily how we shape ourselves, primarily by our intentions, how we shape ourselves, how we are shaped by ourselves, by our environment, through action each moment by intention. And fortunately, which allows us to practice, the force of karma is just as strong in the positive direction as it is in what may be unwholesome. So we can say in the wholesome direction as well as the unwholesome. So happiness creates more happiness for ourselves, for others. Care generates further care. Respect generates more respect, more reverence. Actions of kindness create greater conditions to develop goodness. So, awe, you know, what is it when we stand in awe of something? What is that for you? When you just can only describe, you have no words to describe it. That's awe. It's where we're speechless. We're just in the presence of something so miraculous that we can't even say what we're experiencing. It just takes us into some way that we lose our language. We're without words. I thought of reverence kind of as an endangered species, as an endangered quality. Our culture is lacking in reverence. Oh my God, it's just amazing. And it's you know, I was thinking about, and I was speaking to a neighbor. I just got here. I haven't been here for a while, but apparently somebody's been laying out on our sidewalk or living in a car out front. And just the people I was meeting, you know, I don't know if anybody's ever been to India, but in this part, but the begging was enormous, like pulling at your clothes on the ground. And how if I can't give financially, which I didn't most of the time, how do I revere? How do I behold everyone in front of me, even though I have to put up some boundary, and still honor and respect them, anyone, as myself, as a life, as a beautiful living form. So that was a practice, you know, to see what was happening both internally and then what action emerges from that. Where do you find the self? So reverence begins, respect begins very close, very much at home. And having self-respect is not egotistical. It can be, but it's not. We have to be one of those sentient beings that we want to save, right? We can't exclude saving ourselves. This separation we experience can be with ourself and another, with our body. But most often, what I find, it's the separation between ourself and ourself. So being on this pilgrimage, as I said, and walking the footsteps of the Buddha, it was both internally remembering and bringing that mind to where I was, what we were doing, to the places that, in a sense, had no particular importance, only in my mind, in the mind of others. Everyone was there for many different reasons. The places we went to where the Buddha was born, taught, lived, died, and where many others also studied, practiced, realized, and continued on in the path. Awe produces a state of reverence, a feeling of respect, when we allow that wordlessness to move us in its beauty and its magnificence. We can only respect that we have no idea what's happening. We learned a lot about the Jain religion in India. A lot of the architecture was from that period of time, but at the end of the trip, we went to the Gandhi Museum. And Gandhi emphasized that what the Jain religion teaches is that because all life is essentially interrelated and interconnected, all living beings should be considered sacred and respected. So Gandhi emphasized this teaching as the basis for ahimsa, which was translated in English to reverence for life, nonviolence, or dynamic compassion. I think we all stepped into that museum at the end of our trip, and within the first few minutes, everyone was crying, just watching this video on Gandhi and after all we went through. You know, being in that land and with the people, to really say, like, oh my God, like what this person did, what he dedicated, and how he so had such reverence for life that he staked his own on it, starving, and much like the Buddha. In fact, he wrote something in there about the Buddha. And then many rituals are built on this feeling of reverence, such as this one. Many rituals, such as birth, where Buddha was born, how we take a meal in Orioki, how when people marry, how we pay homage to the dead, how we bow our head in appreciation of kindness of strangers, and everyday generosity. Everyone, a lot of the people, because its basis is Hindu or Muslim or Jain or Buddhist, everyone bows a lot. Everyone is always bowing to each other. What we encounter and recognize or discover about reverence depends to a large degree on the quality of our approach, as I was speaking of. Many of the ancient cultures practiced very careful rituals of approach. an encounter of depth and spirit is always preceded by very careful preparation. Our approach to Fusatsu is done with great care, just as the Buddha did. Offering of incense, and each one of us offering our presence coming tonight, bowing, going into this very vulnerable position of lowering ourselves to the ground, raising our hands, raising the Bodhi mind in that symbolic gesture, taking that in, feeling what that is, both in self and in respect, in graciousness and gratitude to the Buddha for teaching, stating our highest intention with Namu, to be one with our inherent wisdom, our inherent compassion, to be guided by that, to offer that selflessness. Embrace that we are invisibly embraced by great things in our reverence. We don't always see. There's a lot of unseen embracement when we turn towards reverence. When we approach with reverence, great things decide to approach us. Our real life comes to the surface, and its light awakens the concealed beauty in things. When we walk on the earth with reverence, beauty, the earth will decide to trust us. It can feel it. The quieting of our heart, our rushed heart and arrogant mind, lack the gentleness and patience to enter that embrace. So we practice opening our own temple to that rush of the heart, to quiet it, to that arrogant mind, to receive, to let approach how we honor life. Reverence reduces hostility. So in the Buddhist teachings, there are six kinds of reverence mentioned, pointed out. The Sanskrit word is garavata. And it said these are six things that we should practice, to endeavor to develop within us. Forms of respect that have practical, positive results in the context of practice and make us a more appreciative person and give rise to a very positive mind states. Because normally, of course, our mind can react to things we encounter, both wholesomely and unwholesomely. So these six kinds of reverence are reverence for the great teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha, reverence for the Dharma, reverence for the Sangha, reverence for training, reverence for what's called heedfulness, and reverence for hospitality. So reverence for Buddha, the person, is recognizing and acknowledging that debt of gratitude that he discovered and penetrated into the way things are and shared this knowledge with others. We should know how it comes to us. We chant that in our meal gatha. We should know how it comes to us. Without his realization and offering of the Dharma, there would be no us practitioners. reverence for the Dharma, which is another form of appreciative awareness that develops with time, is cultivating reverence for the realization that such knowledge is in all of us. To really respect yourself and others, that the Dharma lives within each person fully. When we are more respectful of the teachings, then we're more likely to put them into practice. And it is putting the teachings into practice that we are, when we are benefited, not thinking about it, but that to-do part, that making it of it, of ourselves, as practice, that is exactly enlightenment. Reverence for the Sangha, the community of people enlightened or just practicing, ordained or not, as a source of great inspiration that shows that ordinary human beings realize the Buddhist path and its fruits, not only super men and super women, spiritual supermen and women. And reverence for training. As we are here to learn to behave in more harmonious ways, since we are all coming together with our various helpful and unhelpful habits, how do we guide each other to not create actions that are harmful, but to offer that which is conducive not only to personal development, but also to benefit society, mindfulness, meditation, to have a more stable base from which to grow wisdom and compassion. We have the precepts, we have the daily schedule, we have liturgy, body and art, face-to-face, our work, we have service positions, we have children, we have jobs, we have orioki. In orioki, how we, you know, those moments, if you have done it, where we start clattering our bowls around and we forget our respect. That's what it shows. Like, where are we? You know, in our engagement with things, we can practice to let everything we touch be treated as if it were the most precious thing that we find the most precious. I have chosen Roshis to say, touch things with loving hands, see things with loving eyes, walk this earth with loving feet. Whenever you handle any equipment or a person, be reverent. Be full of care with everything entrusted to you. Everything we touch or see, everyone for whom we have responsibility, is viewed as something to be cherished. Reverence toward heedfulness, which is a crucial element in practice. And it made me think of the evening gatha, where there's that, take heed, do not squander your life. So this taking heed, and how I understand it, is to be heedful of the teachings and their application in our lives. Otherwise, we get caught up in all kinds of worldly and unwholesome activities and lose sight of the path. So it's when we're getting off or getting into kind of worldly swirls, samsaric swirls, to take heed, to remember the teachings. And then there's the being reverent of hospitality that we're encouraged to cultivate, that we can be a good host, hospitable, that everyone that comes in our view, we can somehow host them in this world. Seeing everyone as a guest, ourself, are we a guest? To whom should I be generous host and make them feel comfortable and happy? Sharing the teachings with others is an important way to be hospitable. And how we do that, being reverent towards the hospitable acts of others, towards ourself, in a positive state of mind. For in recognizing the welcoming action of other people, we make ourselves better people. When we stop and take time to connect with small beauties around us, we nurture sacred respect. When we can relate to ourselves as pure, we can relate to the world as pure. This is a prerequisite. Our relationship with our embodiment determines everything, our entire view of the world. How we relate to self is how we relate to other, is how the world relates. The three worlds are nothing but our mind. But mind. If we see fault in others, we'll see fault in the world. The faults we see in the world is stemming from the unloved parts in ourself. I think, you know, when we find that fault, just turn the light around and just say, what am I saying? What am I seeing right now? That criticism. Usually it's some part of us that we don't want. We don't respect that it's there. Not trying to change it or fix it, but just respect its power. Respect that we see it. Respect that it's being acknowledged. It's, you know, that it's part of our karma. That it's part of our unwholesomeness to work with. When reverence becomes central to our experience, then the exploitation of this earth, of people, of many forms of life, what we do to each other will begin to feel is no longer possible. It's like there's a momentum to do it, but then there's that dawning where it's like, this is no longer possible. This is no longer possible. I can't, like the consciousness can't hold it. More and more we are coming face to face, being demanded to either become aware or remain asleep to the fact that every act that affirms this belonging is a moral act of worship, the fulfillment of a precept written in every human heart.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about the monastery's programs, weekend retreats, and residency, please visit our website at cmm.org.